All right, welcome to another episode of the Deeper Than Dough podcast. I had to read it off the mug, make sure I got it right. And we're going to welcome Josh Still to the episode. Thanks hello, for being hello. Here, Josh.
Hello.
Welcome, Josh.
So, Josh, give us your background.
Well, I've done a lot of stuff. I feel like I'm kind of a wheel and dealer, but also learning a lot as I go. So right now I'm the VP of production for Dirty Dough Manufacturing. So I
shout out to Dirty Dough.
Yeah, Dirty Dough's the best. Gotta eat that Dirty Dough. But so Dirty Dough, I manufacture and build all of the facilities at Dirty Dough, and also all the cookies that go out to the stores. And
the cookies sitting in front of us.
And the cookies sitting right in front of us. So, and then before that, I ran another facility, food manufacturer, that did a lot of arts and crafts type food items for Michaels and Walmart and Target. And we were a pretty large facility. I did that for 3 years. And then,
hey, do you remember when you shipped me, when I was living in San Diego, and you shipped me chocolate?
Yeah.
Because you wanted to see if it melted.
What was it, like 25 pounds?
Yeah. All of this chocolate. I'm like, what do you do with this much chocolate?
You craft.
We craft.
You drizzle it on popcorn, you make it on pretzels, it's all good. So and then before that I actually did some social impact type of ventures where I did some projects in Madagascar. And that was pretty cool before that, and then food sales before that. So kind of jumped all over the place, but food manufacturing is where I'm passionate about, and I feel like I'm pretty good at it.
Explain what you did in Madagascar. It's pretty interesting, pretty cool.
So I did a service church.
A mission, bro. People are from Utah. They know what that is.
Yeah. I don't know how to say it. I did an LDS mission out in Madagascar. And when I came back, I just wanted to find a way that I could give back to Madagascar. And it's really hard to just send money. I mean, it's like you don't know what they spend it on, or they go spend it on a phone when they told you they were going to buy food with it. And then it's just like, how am I going to give back? But like make it have an impact. Like how do you track that impact? Who are you impacting? So I went and met with the BYU Ballard Center. They have a social impact club that you can join, where if you present a good enough idea, they'll give you some capital to start a project out there. So the first project I had started was a pig farm. So our goal was to create a pig farm that could help increase the protein levels that the people could consume in Madagascar. So
that's crazy to think about. Like we don't think about that here.
Yeah.
Like how do you get somebody enough protein?
Yeah.
Well, it's just more protein shakes.
Go to Costco and buy some Premier protein.
Oh no, it's all the Fair Life, man.
You don't go for
the Premier anymore. That's why the pallet sells out.
So that's what the goal was with the pig farms. Because I remember you told me that. Because didn't you guys grow it to like one of the largest pig farms in all of Madagascar?
Oh, we were probably one of the largest ones for sure. I mean, it was like everyone has like two sows, which is a female pig that's ready to give birth, I can't even think of what a boy is called, but or a male pig. But so everyone has like three or four sows, and then a male pig that will get it. And then that's it. I mean, it's like that's all they have. So then we were like, well, we're going to commercialize it. We're going to try and go bigger. But the problem is in Madagascar, I mean, it's like the 1800s down there.
Yeah.
Like literally, I mean, it's like everything that we have now, it's just crazy. I mean, we give pigs shots. I had to get into the whole health thing. I went up to like huge pig farms to learn how to like even raise a pig. Like,
yeah. So but how does that? What did you do different than if I just went and did it for profit, you know? Because you guys were still doing it for profit. But what was the difference between, you know, somebody not having the purpose?
And this is where it kind of gets complicated, because it is for a profit, right? I'm not a nonprofit. I can't go ask for a person to donate money. And that's where it got a little bit difficult, because we would go and ask for money and people are like, can we donate to you? And we couldn't. So the way that we look at it, and this is – and I haven't been in the industry for a while, so I'll probably slaughter how it's actually people present it. But with a social impact, it's supposed to be a for profit. Now, you can either sell it at market price or you can reduce it, but you're tracking your impact and you're very selective on how you're going to affect people's lives.
Which I would argue that the largest impacts, and this is me just making this up though, so
yeah,
are for profit. And there's a Conscious Capitalism book, and it's the Whole Foods guy. I mean, what kind of impact has he had versus a nonprofit? Probably much larger. Now, because I also want to get into your tuk-tuks. Tuk-tuks. Yeah, yeah. I don't know how to say it.
Speedy tuk-tuk.
Because that one makes depends a lot more sense. Maybe let's jump into that. Tell us what that is. And then we can jump back into how it relates to what you did with the pig farms.
Well, with really the pig farm, just I could probably end it right now with the pig farms. But because it got too expensive. Our goal was to give more protein to the community that we were in. We had 100 sows.
How are you going to do that? By just having more pigs? By
more
giving
pigs,
lower
cheap
price?
Okay. Lower price. And because we were able to buy stuff in bulk, we could start importing if we needed to. But with Madagascar, you run into the government. So they're going to tax you or want bribes when you import feed. We found that we were starting to take more food from the market to feed our pigs to then feed it back. So it kind of got comp. I mean, we had 100 sows. We had 150 piglets.
Oh, you were they were eating so much that it was taking.
We had to go to the market. We had to go to the market and be like, hey, I need all of your soybeans right now. And they're like, well, we can't like that. So then we'd start buying it more and then the market. So then it started to suffer. So then it just Madagascar, we couldn't do it the right way.
Yeah.
In the location we were at.
Tell us about the other one though.
So then
that one was the next one was cool.
Well, as we were running the pig farm, we were like, we got to get into something that doesn't eat food or get sick because they don't have all the medicines and whatnot for pigs. And pigs are like humans. I mean, you get 100 of them right next to each other a long time, they get sick and then they die. And it's just really tough. It's tough to see. I mean, it's really tough. So we branched off and we decided to go after a model. So there's a company in Uganda called Tugende. I'll give a shout out to Tugende. They've done an amazing job. I think they've raised $25 million. I mean, they lease out. They call them Boda Bodas, but it's a taxi service where a lot of times in Africa, they can't afford, nor do they have the credit, or they don't even have trackable credit. Mm-hmm. They don't even have to find a way to get money to buy a vehicle where they can run these taxis for people. So the goal was, hey, let's find a way to.
But how's it being run right now? It's a few rich people are buying all the taxis and then they would basically lease them and eat up pretty much all of them.
Yeah, they lease it. And if you can't make the payment that day, you're kicked out.
You don't have a job anymore.
And then you're gonna do it for 10 years and you're never ever gonna own anything. Yeah. So it was like, we're trying to switch the model where it's like, hey, we're gonna find a taxi system and we're gonna empower. It's all about empowering an individual to own something. Mm-hmm. Like you will never be able to own your house in Madagascar or anywhere, probably in Africa. So it's like, let's find a way for you to own the house or own your taxi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then what does that mean? I own my taxi. Now I can make more money because I'm not renting it. I can go buy a house. Yep. And then from there, so it's just like this waterfall effect that we were trying to create.
Which just doesn't exist. I mean, and we're running into that here in the US with house pricing increase. I mean, that's the one way that people build wealth.
Yep.
And now it's like, you graduate college right now or you just get married, you have your first kid, good luck buying a house if you make 60 grand a year.
Yeah.
You ain't qualifying for shit.
Yeah.
You know? So you're doing kind of that, let's give them like really what built America's economy and the middle class was allowing people to own homes. And you're doing that on a taxi level.
Like,
here's a job, but here's ownership in an actual asset.
So yeah. And what the taxi we picked was a tuk-tuk. So we call it a tuk-tuk. Some countries call it a tuk-tuk, but it's a three-wheeled. It's a three-wheeled rickshaw. So it has the front driver, one wheel up front, two wheels in the back. They're very popular in India, Thailand. Mm-hmm. Very, very popular. There's some super.
They're like little motorcycles.
Yeah, they're little motorcycles, there's name brands that you can buy, or you can buy off brands. So you want. And so what we decided was we went to a beach city that had a population of like 500,000 people. I don't remember what the population was, but these were really popular. But there was a monopoly. Like someone bought 100 of them, and a lot of times they weren't even in Madagascar. They were over in India. They were up in northern Africa. So it just depended.
Yeah.
And they'd come in, and then you'd have to rent this tuk-tuk from them all the time. And so what we decided was we're going to raise capital here for profit. Mm-hmm. We're going to lease them out in Madagascar. And over the period of 2 years, that's how long it took. Because averagely, they were renting it for $10 a day. So to pay off this $2,500 tuk-tuk, it took them 2 years to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So after 2 years, if they made payments every single month, they'd be able to rent it. Or they'd be able to own it.
And now they're pulling in the full profit.
Now they're pulling.
Which is life changing.
Yeah. Then they can take it and they go rent it for someone else if they want. And then they can go do, they can work themselves out of a job, right? They go give it to someone else and now they're making money.
And this is very similar to the well drilling program that we're going to start doing, which you need to come to Africa. We're going in February. I think it's just Craig and I. Right? Yeah. And then you, anyways. But it's all about.
I might change my mind last second.
It's going from giving them the money to, no, we'll drill the well for you and we'll pay for it, but you have to pay 10 cents a month per person.
Yeah.
Right back. It's something manageable, but then it gives them the ownership, because if they don't, I mean, we just treat things different. Like if we own it versus if somebody's gifting it to us. So how big did you guys get that? How many?
We had spent probably
tuk-tuks.
We had spent probably $500,000 on tuk-tuks. So we had about 140 units.
Wow.
And it's all in Ari, like the money that we were bringing in. But and then we would be wiring it back here to pay back our investors. But I feel like we kind of ran into a culture type of mentality. Was like, yes, we were empowering. We were laying it out. It was very clear what the expectations were, what they needed to do. But then it always came back to like we were taking advantage of them, which it kind of hurt, right? Like, because we're not taking advantage. We're giving them a chance.
Who's saying that? Who says that?
The drivers were.
That they were saying that we're being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're like, what do you mean? What? Look at your other option.
Yeah, literally, look at your other. You go drive for this other guy, and you'll never own it ever.
Uh-huh.
Or you drive for us, and we're charging you the same price.
Yeah, but same after price. 2 years here.
But then they're like, you're taking advantage of us. And so it kind of like the culture got in the way. The roads weren't maintained very well. So there's a big mine there that built all these nice roads. But then the city it was their job to maintain it. So potholes started to come up. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about like big ones. I mean, this is like a full like
four-wheeler. So is that wrecking your
maintenance went up. Because mm-hmm. we had to pay for maintenance inside this parameter where they didn't pay for it. It just started not to work as well. I mean, we definitely probably paid back, 70% of the investors. So we didn't necessarily lose money. It was a great venture. We had a lot of fun doing it. And we met a lot of people in the space that are trying to make change.
Yeah.
Like Tugende. Tugende's doing the same thing in Uganda, but Uganda's just a little, they're not in the 18th century. Yeah, they're in the 19th century. Or I've never been to Uganda. I mean, it could be better than that, but they're a little more advanced. So their expectation was higher. Because Tugende, they rent out like 100,000 units. Wow. But they do Boda Bodas. They're like little motorcycles and you put one on the back. Hmm. So it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Instead of $2,500, it might be $200 or something. So, and then COVID hit and it killed us.
Yeah. Well, during that whole process, because after that, then you did American Crafts and you blew them up on their food division doing 60 plus million, right? And just the food within a few years. How did that compare? I mean, because that's big. I mean, the numbers on American Craft were like, they didn't have food crafts, right? You came in, built the program, and within under 3 years, they did 60 something million in just food. How does that feel versus how you felt running the pig farms and the tuk-tuks, right? Because I'm sure it's very different and they're both very rewarding and both fulfilling, but I want to kind of get
the difference between
which one, what are the pros and cons, which one you enjoyed more?
Well, I put them in completely different categories, honestly. Yep. Like I tried really hard to make this Madagascar stuff work because it was very rewarding. I mean, you were helping families. You were able to like pay for someone to wash their clothes. I mean, they had to wash their clothes every single day, or you were able to give them a stock of rice up front. Like you bought the rice up front and then they paid you back over the, so it was like very like tangible things where you were like affecting this family drastically. But it got to the point where I needed to affect my own personal family's life.
Yeah.
Cause I had prioritized really like Madagascar over myself. Cause it was just, I was young, married, didn't really care much.
And now you have two kids or three kids?
Three kids now.
Yeah.
So then in 2019, my wife was pregnant with our second baby. And it was like, it's time to maybe find something in the U.S. Make some money, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And what American Crafts did amazing about the Mitchell brothers, I mean, they're amazing. And what they did was they empowered myself. Like, they had all the means to come in and do this food manufacturing. They didn't necessarily have the know-how, but they had all the proper systems set up, but they didn't share any of that really with me. It was just kind of like, hey, Josh, we want to start a food manufacturer. They had some sales, so they were doing some, but they were just importing it. It was like maybe $2 million a year. I mean, it was like nothing. So then, and they were pumped about that, but then it's like, let's do food manufacturing. And I'm brand new. I've been there for 4 months. That's what they hired me to do. And they never like lend a crutch or anything. It was like, you figure it out. Cause, and then 3 years from now, I'm like looking back, I was like, they could have solved so many of my problems along the way where like it would have been so easy, but then it wouldn't have been as rewarding.
Yeah.
Like I literally.
Do you think they did that on purpose or is it kind of just like a.
That was going to be my question is what was the purpose in that?
In business, you wouldn't think that that would be on purpose.
Yeah. No, I don't know if they did it on purpose or not.
Okay. But, well, let's give them credit for it.
They create a whole food manufacturing just to teach Josh life lessons.
Yeah, that's no, it. They did. Well, I remember the first like 4 months, they were like, we like Josh, but he has a lot to learn. So maybe that's what they did. They threw me that. Yeah. But I mean, it was like 18, 20 hours a day trying to set up this food manufacturer. We had contracts with Walmart already, big contracts. We had a big contract with Michaels already. We didn't even have a facility. It was like they gave us these contracts and then they're like, okay, Josh, you got to figure out how to get all the equipment here. This was the end of October. You have to get the equipment here. You have to find the building, build out the rooms, and you have to ship the product, $1 million order, by the end of January. It was like, so, but it was fun though, because they supported you as well as like they met with you and like helped you figure it out. But I don't think they necessarily realized like what they were getting into either. Yeah. But I think that's
entrepreneurship, man.
Yeah.
So say yes, figure it out later.
Yeah. Seriously. And that's what they are. They say yes, they figure it out. But
how did that feel though when they put that in front of you? Did you feel like, okay, I'm up for the challenge, or did that just feel unbelievably daunting?
No, I was up for the challenge. Yeah. 100%. Like, and I think that's where it's like it's different, right? Like the social impact, helping Madagascar, like I was helping other people. Over here, I guess I still wasn't like focusing on myself. Like I was focusing so hard on the company to make sure it was going to go profitable. Mm-hmm. We were going to hire the right people, have the right team in place. Everyone felt supported.
But financially, I'm sure it felt a lot better that you're supporting yourself, your wife, your kids.
Yeah. I mean, health insurance is great, right? But yeah. Like other financial means as well. But yeah, I mean, doing this whole thing with American Crafts was just very rewarding for me. I mean, it just showed me what I am capable of doing.
Yeah. So now how do you combine the two, right? Have that personal impact. Like I'm helping that person have rice today.
Yeah.
But also like I'm building something huge that I'm proud of, that it's tangible for me and my family here and financially.
Yeah.
And I mean, not expecting you to have an answer, but that's the question for me. And that's what I, you know, with the Dirty Dough and we're trying to do the mental health, like let's make a lot of money, but in conjunction with something that is tangible on the nonprofit side. And then also with drilling wells in Africa.
Well, I've thought of a lot about this question, right? Like how do you get the same gratification of helping people while growing a huge company? I remember I'd sat in a room with Ryan Smith with Qualtrics. Cause I walked in, we had these little toy tuk-tuks and we're like, hey, can you give us money? And he's like, I'm not going to give you money, but I'll buy three of them for an outrageous cost. Right. So like we bought three, we made a lot of money off of it because, and then we pumped it back into Madagascar, but that was kind of his way to help. And so we were like, it kind of opened the door. Like, hey, we can ask for more. Right.
Yeah.
So then we went back 6 months later and I asked for $500,000 from Ryan.
From Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and we had all of our projections and why we needed that and everything. And he's like, you know what? I'll be honest with you. Like the social impact is amazing, but I'm impacting my own employees.
Yeah.
By giving them a job. And then I'm giving them better benefits so that they can live more. Mm-hmm. Right. So he listed all these reasons on why he thinks that he doesn't need to go to a different country to do social impact. He could do it right now inside his own company. And he turned us down, but he's still he's like, I'll advise you every single month. You come here every month and I'll kind of give you ideas.
Yeah.
And we didn't take him up on it. That was probably the dumbest decision.
When a billionaire gives you that.
When the billionaire says, I'll advise you. But so then it's like with this, I mean, creating a new manufacturing with Dirty Dough, it's like you can create an environment where you are profitable. Mm-hmm. Good for the company, shareholders, whoever, but you can also empower every single individual inside the company. It's all about empowering individuals. Like, how do you let them feel like they're successful in their life?
And the funny thing is, it's not one or the other. It's not like, let's bottom line, or give my employees the best job. I mean, you can do both, because mm-hmm. as you do both, you have less turnover, less hiring expenses, less training expenses. But it's scary because you're like, is this investment worth it?
Yeah.
I actually listened to Jeff Bezos talk one time, and I guess he owns 16-point-something% of Amazon, which does, I assume, hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars a year. And he considers himself a huge philanthropist just because he employs so many millions of people and pays taxes. And that generates so many millions of dollars worth of infrastructure and social programs and government programs for people. And I think that's a lot of times the mark people miss with capitalism in general and entrepreneurship in general is, as the water level rises, so do all the boats on the water level, both big and small.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge impact.
Well, so, it's creating an atmosphere for them to be able to succeed too. I mean, it's like, I have an employee that has been working with me for like 3 years and she's now at Dirty Dough, and it's like, she has daycare, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
do we do daycare?
We're in the process of meeting.
Heck yeah, I was going to ask
you. That's awesome.
So it's like, she's paying someone else to come work for me. Like, yeah. That sounds, I mean, not every company can afford to pay for someone's daycare, but it's like, if we can do that, I mean, that's so life changing for them, where they can, one, they probably can pick a better daycare.
And you've been on, I wanted to get into that. Right when you came in, you're like, this is what I want for my employees.
Yeah.
Which was sweet. And one of those things was daycare. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Let's do it. It doesn't even matter if we don't make money, or I'm like, I don't even freaking care. Let's lose money. It doesn't matter. Like, let's do it and see what happens, type of deal. Because I'm big into getting wives to, you know, if they feel more fulfilled at a mix, I mean, either just working outside of the house or both.
Yeah.
And not just focusing on just being a mom, then let's give them that opportunity if we can.
Yeah. And it's doing small stuff like this that keeps the employees there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just feeling, and eventually they might move on in 6 years or something. And you want to be there and support them and help them move on to their next job. Like, you want them to be able to reach out to you in 10 years from now and be like, hey, it's not working out. Can I come work with you? And maybe they're hiring you. I have no idea, but like, helping people in general brings so much satisfaction to me as a person. And it probably helps that individual, like,
yeah,
knowing that they have support from someone else.
Well, dude, you're lucky, I think. And the fact that you went for that right off the bat.
Yeah.
Of like the social route and the social impact and then helping my employees. Dude, I just want the money. Well, wasted several years of just going for that money. Well, you know,
but still,
how did you figure that? I mean, how'd you start on the right track?
No, I didn't really start. I mean, I did quit a good paying sales job to go into it, but there was just a lot of fulfillment. I mean, I have ties to Madagascar. I care about Madagascar. Yeah. I care, because you have people reach out to you all the time. Hey, can I have $50? And $50 to us here is not, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not a ton of money. I mean, it's really,
you get
like,
paid a lot,
it's,
Josh.
It's like a dinner. It's like a dinner with your wife, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, $50 to them is like half of their month's salary.
$50 is nothing to Josh. I've seen his paychecks. Yeah.
No, that's not true. Don't say anything about it. But
all the listeners in Madagascar, get out your WhatsApp and message Josh.
Serious. Hit him up on Facebook Messenger. He's got it. He can help you out.
I wouldn't necessarily say like why. I don't know why I went that path.
But that's something I've admired about you, because you did that.
Yeah.
I mean, at least before I did, right?
Well, it's hard to do it too, because no one supports you when you do it.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, you're not going to make any money. Don't go do that. It's dumb. And then you're like, well, I'm going to try it.
I went the same route as Bennett, and I jumped right into door-to-door. Did very well there, made money there. And it's kind of like, yeah, you feel kind of selfish doing that a little bit, because you're like, I'm literally just knocking on people's doors just for the intent of, I want to make money.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the product and the service and everything, it helps them, but
bro, pest control's a scam.
it helps. It's,
solar's,
I think,
are
I,
right.
It's good.
Pest control's a scam.
It's good value, but
whatever you want to tell yourself.
But at the end of the day, and I'm just making myself feel better here, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, if we had jumped into $50,000 a year jobs, it's like, is there Dirty Dough?
No, probably
not.
Yeah.
And now look what we can do with it. You know.
Well, doing the route you did, it allows for the lifestyle and the type of companies that you're able to start now. I mean,
yeah.
Everyone's on their own path.
Yeah. No, for sure.
It really is incredible.
Like, well, there's nothing like a 42-hour flight to Madagascar.
Oh my gosh. 2 days of travel just to get there.
Yeah.
So we booked the flights to go to drill the wells in Africa. And same thing. It's like, it's $4,000 to drill a well. Like, yeah, you have to buy the drilling machine, but that's only $35,000. That's only a one-time expense. $4,000 to drill into an aquifer that's replenished every year. As long as you maintain the well with O-rings and crap, like, that's a lifetime supply of water.
Yeah.
For $4,000, average village is 800 people. That's $5. Like, I drank a kombucha on my way here, you know, and that was probably $5.
Yeah, probably was.
And it was nasty. But my gut health is thanking me, I think. Anyways, but just crazy. Like, I didn't want to go on that trip because I don't want to sit on the plane. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Here I am. I'm complaining about sitting on the plane. These guys don't have clean water. It's just, man, we live in different worlds. And I think that's so beneficial. Have you guys thought about that with your kids and your soon-to-be kid? To be like, how do I show them? You know, I mean, my kids go to Mexico all the time, so they see it. And we go to Mexico a few times a year. But, you know, using it as teaching moments, like, look how lucky we are. And now my daughter, she was riding her little Power Wheels thing. And riding the Power Wheels thing, and something falls, like a wrapper falls off. And she gets out of the car, picks up. She's like, I want this to be clean because I don't want it to be like Mexico. And my wife's like, did you tell her to say that? I was like, I swear to tell her to say that. But she knows at 5 years old, like, the difference, you know, on a little different. But anyways, have you guys thought about that? Madagascar's far. It's not like you're going to just bring your kids to Madagascar. But how do you show them what other people live like so they can be grateful for what they have?
I haven't honestly really thought about that. I mean, I took Wells, our oldest. I took
him. He's five, right?
Yeah, he's five now. I took him to Madagascar when he was 8 months old.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's been there. He doesn't remember. 8 months old? Yeah.
Are you crazy?
I was crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in it.
He probably has some weird disease he's never going to come back from.
Nah, he drank that OB with that nice water.
Oh, my gosh.
All day, every day. I feel like it's kind of hard. Because, I mean, with three kids, each one has a different personality, right?
Yeah.
And so some are going to grasp it. It's like the oldest child kind of grasps it faster for some reason. Like, Wells, yesterday we ran out of candy trick-or-treating. He's like, I'll give all my candy to the kids that come to the door. And you're like, well, you don't need to do that. But it's like, I haven't really thought about how I want to teach them to, like, be in that, have that mindset where, like, we are lucky. Because we are lucky. I live by a lot of my family. We have a nice house.
Look at the history. Don't compare yourself to, like, who's around you, right?
Yeah.
Compare yourself to every human that's ever lived. And then you get every human that's ever lived, you're in the top, not one percentile, not 0.1, but like 0.0001. Like, you live better than freaking the King Pharaoh did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you sleep on a softer bed than the Pharaoh of Egypt slept on. And you eat healthier food, or you can if you want. But we're extremely lucky is what I'm getting at. And we take that for granted because we look at just our immediate circle. But once you bring that scope out, and that's what I'm trying to do with my kids. I guess that's what the question is. Well, if you guys have thought about that.
What's fun about what you're able to do is you're able to go to Mexico and they're able to see it firsthand. Like, the difference. There's the difference. And you've also lived in California. Like, they're getting they get to live in a whole bunch of different areas where they're seeing a difference.
And Chicago, bro.
And Chicago.
The hood.
You lived in Chicago?
Just for a little bit.
Oh.
But yeah, Naperville. West, I mean, it was a nice suburb. I'm not, I knocked weren't nice. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It would be nice to be able, I feel like learning from, like, visually seeing it, because you try and prep to go to these, like, you are lucky, but until you actually have that step out of it, you don't really, like,
you don't
remember. I'm lucky. Yeah, I'm lucky. But you don't know until you, it's like, I didn't even know what a plane was until 19 when I had to get on a plane. Then I went to a country where I had not been outside of, like, Utah and Idaho and sometimes California, where it's like all the same culture. And then you go to Madagascar and it's like you step off the plane and it smells.
Yeah, you're like, what the heck?
What the heck am I doing? And so it's like, I guess I haven't really thought about it. It'd be fun to go do projects, you know, in different countries where they are able to see that.
I'm always trying to think, like, okay, what do I want to teach my kids?
Yeah.
what am I, you know, what's this lesson? You know, what do I say when they ask me this question or whatever? So,
you know, what's interesting too is, so I serve the same LDS mission with Josh for all listeners listening. That's how Josh and I know each other. That's how Bennett and I met was through Josh. But I saw people in Madagascar that I felt like were actually happier than people in America. And
that was the question I was about to ask.
And I mean, that was the interesting thing to me is I was really surprised because I expected total poverty when I walked off the plane. It's exactly what I saw was total poverty. You see it, you smell it. It's every, you taste it in the food. It's just terrible. It's like the 10th poorest country in the world. But you still meet people that are extremely happy. And I think a lot of that, from what I saw, was centered around family. Their culture is very, very centered around family, you know, the parents, the kids, grandkids, cousins, grandparents, and everything. And I think that's one thing sometimes missing here in our society is the family. And, you know, something that I think a lot about is I'm preparing to have my first child. And, you know, I look at you two and you guys have what appears to me, I mean, it's always hard because when you compare yourselves to those around you, you usually see the best of the best. But from what I see, very happy marriages, very like happy families. But I think that's usually where a lot of people's happiness goes away is when they have dysfunction in the family.
Oh, for sure.
I think that's where the pro with American Crafts was I learned how to work hard and I learned what I'm capable of. The con was is I'd kind of gotten rid of everything else.
Yeah.
I was working. That's what I was doing. I was working. Yeah, I started to make great money. Right. And it affected my family. Like, that's what I wanted.
You drive a Tesla now. I saw
Yeah, I drive
there.
A Tesla.
He drives a Tesla.
I tried to update.
When did you get that Tesla?
I tried to upgrade with Bennett here. And
oh, you told me he was going to do it. And I didn't know you did it.
I did it last week. So
oh, my gosh.
1 weekend. Here we go.
Wow.
But so it went from the 3 years and then, you know, probably in July, not even that long ago. Yeah. I was sitting on the couch with my wife. It was like, I'm not like happy doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I make great money. And it's kind of like people, I feel like people kind of get harped when they say that, right? Like, it's not all about the money. There's other happiness, but it's like, what am I, like, there's a gap in my life. What am I missing? And it's like, is my relationship with my family strong enough?
Mm-hmm. It's because we're on that wrong freaking, we're up to that wrong target.
Yeah.
But which is cool to go to Madagascar. And that's literally, I was going to ask that question because I've been to, I don't know, a few dozen countries. And I noticed that it's like, and then statistically speaking, you look at like, what are the suicide rates in Madagascar, right? They're probably not nearly as high as they are. They're probably not nearly as high as they are here in Utah.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, so.
I ever knew anyone that.
No.
Or heard of it ever.
It's not a thing.
And then, or like, how many teenage girls are cutting themselves here versus there, right? It's probably very different. So that led me to the belief of, okay, well, for after happiness and fulfillment, is it money? Well, I think that's a clear answer that it's not. So what is it? Then that put me down the mind or the path of mental health. It's in your mind. And what's what is working on your mind? Well, that's mental health. And then it's like, that's what we need to focus on.
Yeah.
You should go. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, like in July, it's like when I come to this thing, it's like, I'm going to go to a mental health coach, right? Or a therapist or whatever.
I was just about to tell you. And I just said, you should go. And then I stopped.
And just talk through it.
I just came from a therapy session. That's
the problem is, what's hard for me when those ones is, I've been several times. They're great to talk. Like it gives you this connection and it's a private setting.
Yeah.
And you explore everything that's going on in your head. But the problem is, they push you past your comfort. You have your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And they want you to think past your comfort zone. And it's hard. It's hard to think past your comfort zone. I'll tell you, like, you might resolve like really like the top surface, layer.
Yeah.
And then you're like, then you start to get into the deep layer stuff. And you're kind of like, I don't want to think.
I don't
like,
want to go in there.
Like, and then you do dive in and you're like, I don't know what I want. Like,
and that's scary. Dude.
I don't. And
that's freaking scary.
And that's when they're saying like, you need to, if you want us to be able to progress past these conversations, you have to envision how you want your life to be.
Yeah.
And how you're going to get there. And you're like, wow, that's scary. Like, how do I do that?
Yeah. Like I could do that in business. I could go build a company and but I don't know how to freaking do that. That's way harder. I did this some coaching session on Sunday. So just 2 days ago, legitimately it was the hardest thing I've ever done. I was like talking to a pillow and I don't know, dude. I was yeah. uncomfortable. I started crying. I hated it. Yeah. And I'm like, can we be done, please? I just kept, that was my first session with this lady, dude. She's done some, I don't even know, man. but I'm going into that because like, that's what I want to, like, am I after the right target?
Yeah. So before Madagascar, I've kind of always been in, and I think it has to do with your mentor, right? When you come out of college or high school, who's going to teach you how to live the rest of your life? Mm-hmm. And I met a guy, Scott Litke. He affected the way that I thought about life forever. And we like, he wanted to get into cacao. He's all about like intuitive, but he wanted to figure out how to like come up with his own cacao chocolate product where it gave you like high caffeine, high theobromine, like you could eat it and you'd feel different because there's different ways you can ferment it. So we had flown to Panama City. He would take me out to all these places with him because we would have these like good conversations. And we went to Ecuador one time. We were at this hotel and this guy was from California. We met and this guy was like, he was just talking about being intuitive, knowing like who you are as a person, but then like interacting with objects. Like how does like eating this cookie in front of us, you can taste the difference when it goes from corporation from family owned. Because there's a different amount of energy that goes into the cookie. And so he's telling me he created this chocolate. I can't even remember the chocolate. He's from California. And he said every time they make chocolate, they turn the music up really loud and they sing. Because they felt like
a Latin thing for sure.
Because they feel like they could get this emotion. And he was like, he went into this whole thing where.
Well, they do that with plants. You sing to plants and they grow faster. Better
or like certain type of music influences the growth
as well. Yeah.
Well, I'm just come from Utah. Like, I've never even like considered any of this. Like, what does this guy tell me about? But then he told me like this thing where this big company, he loved this chocolate bar. And then in September, he's eaten it one time and he didn't like it anymore. And then 8 months later, he met the owners. Like, oh, yeah, we sold it to a corporation in September.
Oh.
And they changed the process and how it's it. And he's like, and to him, it's like, this is, but it's just crazy to think about. There's so much more ways to think about how you approach life instead of just the normal day-to-day. I leave to work, I come home from work, I survive.
I'm just going through the motions.
And so that's what the mental health, the therapist has been really good about is just talking it through and pushing past the comfort zones.
Yeah, and there's some plant medicines that you could explore next time you go to Ecuador, bro. Some plant medicines that... Or you can just eat chocolate and there. There's actually, I did ketamine last week.
Did you?
It's a, you can do it, an American, it's a psychedelic, but they freaking put it in an IV.
Oh, really?
It's legal. Yeah, dude, you can just do it down the street here, man.
How was
just
it?
Just tripping in another world.
Yeah?
It's like 45 minutes. So you do 6 treatments. I've done 2. And then I'll do 2 next week, and I think 2 after the week after that. It's 45 minutes and you literally go, and I mean, I've done mushroom trips, so it's similar, but you don't feel anything. Like legitimately last week, during that 45 minutes, you don't have a care or stress in the world. Not that you don't care about anything, but you're just fine with everything.
Yeah.
Just like everything is.
You're just at peace.
It's just fine. Yeah. And I'm like, that was so weird. And then afterwards, I mean, Wade, we had a good conversation on Wednesday. That was a ketamine talk, bro.
Was it?
That was my.
Was that a ketamine talk?
Yeah. Don't do it anymore.
That was my ketamine talk, dude, because I did it Monday, Tuesday. And I'm like, you know, I need to get some stuff off my chest and with Wade. And anyways, dude. And
a little heart to heart there, guys.
A little heart to heart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very good.
Well, because I stopped thinking, you know, like I start seeing bigger picture.
Yeah.
I'm not like, am I going to make somebody not like me momentarily? Anyways, if you want some help, bro, go to this ketamine clinic. It's crazy stuff. But I'll report back after my 6 weeks.
That's crazy.
So we need to wrap up here. We've got to 0 of the questions.
Yeah.
let me do one at the very end. No, it doesn't matter. I was just joking. We usually don't do all the questions. But I know we were talking about that before. How do you want to be remembered? Let's go straight to the last question. What's the legacy that Josh still wants to leave behind?
I don't think I've thought about it. I mean,
go think about it, dude. That's
well, it's like
that's a big one though. You need to go think about that.
As far as like what I want to be with the people I work closely with and my family is like, you know, he listened. He was there for me when I needed him. And I think that matters. I mean, I
think present,
being reliable and present.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be present. And for all these just you could think, I've talked to a lot of, there's one guy that I talked to and you're having this conversation with him and you can tell he's just thinking about hunting deer or something. All right. It's like being present is huge.
Yeah.
And like being there for him. I mean, just like the support, you don't get that with everyone. I mean,
it's very hard for me to do it. My mind's always going somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's the most important to do it with your spouse, right? Oh, like, yeah. and that's what I've been working on is like being present in the situations that I'm in.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to be remembered for. I don't want to be remembered as he wasn't actually here, right? He was here, but he wasn't.
I take a few times and I try to do it daily, but obviously I don't remember if I do it every day, but just to stop and like, this is my life. Like I'm in this podcast room. Like how amazing are these cameras? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we've been recording this and I didn't realize that there's a freaking super expensive camera that's capturing me and then transmitting me through electricity to people who are going to listen to this. Like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. And I just took that for granted this entire podcast, but I just stopped and I realized it and I like picked up on one thing like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a freaking miracle to my dumb brain. Anyways, that like being present, it's very hard for me. So I'm trying to proactively take a second, like look around and be like, this is my life.
Yeah. It is interesting. Like to.
So I like that. I like that. Be present. That's what you want to be known for. But it also felt like you kind of just went with it on the spot. You need to go think about that.
I have thought about that a lot, but okay, I will go back. I will go back to my first statement is like, I haven't thought about it. Like that's where I'm at now.
Yeah.
As far as, because I am on a journey the last right. 4 months, right? And what, July, 4 months ago, 3 months ago.
I'm going to give you some chocolate after the show.
Yeah. Pump it in. Let's eat it all.
Yes, sir.
All right, everybody. Josh Still, thanks for being on the episode, man.
The man.
Please like and subscribe and do all that other fun stuff to make sure you don't miss out on future episodes.
Thanks for coming.
That's a wrap. Beautiful. All right, Josh. We got some chocolates I'm going to give you. We have some inside.